Okay, I call this meeting of the House Preventive Health Division to order. Today is March 9th, 2022. The first item on the agenda is the roll call. Could the clerk please take the roll?
Good morning. Chair Freiberg.
Present.
Freiberg, present. Vice Chair Bierman. Vice Chair Bierman. Representative Grunhagen.
Present.
Grunhagen, present. Representative Akam.
Present.
Akam, present. Representative Abaje.
Present.
Abaje, present. Representative Ackland. Representative Ackland. Representative Carlson.
Present.
Carlson, present. Representative Franzen.
Present.
Franzen, present. Representative Heintzman.
Present.
Heintzman, present. Representative Morrison.
Morrison, present.
Morrison, present. Representative Pryor.
Present.
Pryor, present. Chair, you have a quorum.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Gelman. A quorum is present. The next item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes for the March 2nd, 2022 meeting. Representative Akam, would you, Representative Pryor, looks like you unmuted yourself. Would you like to move approval of the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to move the minutes.
Okay, thank you. Representative Pryor has moved approval of the minutes. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, the minutes are approved. So, and it looks like Representative Bierman is here. So if the attendance could reflect that, that would be great. And then so we have two bills on the agenda, and we also have a presentation from the Department of Health on the latest CDC guidance with respect to COVID prevention protocols. The first bill that we will be hearing is relevant to that topic, so I thought it was a good time for an update from the Department of Health. And I believe Assistant Commissioner Joanna Dornfeld is here to testify. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and then proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Joanna Dornfeld, and I'm an assistant commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Health. I'm happy to be here this morning to provide just an update on some new measures that were released by CDC about a week and a half ago. Next slide, please. So about 10 days ago, the CDC did announce its new COVID-19 community levels. They are shifting their focus, and the Department of Health is certainly following the lead of the CDC, to preventing the most severe outcomes and minimizing healthcare strain, to really focus on measuring the items that are going to ensure we have a strong healthcare system to continue to manage through COVID moving forward. It does recognize that the risk of severe COVID-19 for many Minnesotans is lower due to vaccination, boosters, and prior infection. So this will change our alert system to low, medium, and high, and it really shifts to individual decision-making on prevention measures, such as masking and testing based on these new levels. Those that are more at risk may choose to engage in different mitigation measures than others. And we are anticipating some sector-specific guidance that will be coming soon from the CDC. Next slide, please. So really kind of looking at the measures and metrics themselves, the CDC is looking at a combination of three metrics. They are looking at a new COVID-19 hospital admissions per 100,000 population in the past 7 days, the percent of staffed inpatient beds occupied by COVID-19 patients, and the total of new COVID-19 cases per 100,000 population in the past 7 days to determine the COVID-19 community level. As you can see, based on the items that they are measuring, it really is focused on preventing severe impacts to our healthcare system, so that those that do need to utilize a healthcare system, should they have a case of severe COVID, have access to that needed care. In addition, the CDC has updated its recommended mitigation numbers for the new COVID-19 community levels, as I mentioned earlier. It really shifts to individual decision-making on prevention measures like masking and testing based on these new measures. You can see in the low category, really the recommendations are to remain up to date on your COVID vaccines and get tested if you have symptoms if your community and county is in this low level. In the medium level, if you are at risk for severe illness, really the recommendation is to talk to your healthcare provider about whether you need to wear a mask and take other precautions. And again, to remain up to date on your COVID vaccines and get tested if you develop symptoms. It's only in the high measure, community measure, where the CDC is recommending indoor masking. But again, maintaining kind of the other layered mitigation measures. The other thing that is really important to note is that people may choose to mask at any time, particularly those that may be at greater risk or may anticipate being around those at greater risk. If someone's immunocompromised or perhaps is going to see an elderly parent, they may choose to mask at any of the kind of community levels. So the COVID-19. Should I proceed?
Yes, please
proceed. The COVID-19 community level will inform the CDC recommendations on prevention measures like masking, screening, testing in public settings, and including in schools. Recommendations for layered prevention measures will depend on the COVID-19 level in the community. And layering prevention means the more steps you take to slow the spread of COVID, the safer you will be and the safer you will feel. Next slide, please. So just to look very quickly at kind of what we are seeing here in Minnesota, as we have been reporting, for a number of weeks, we continue to see our positivity rate decline. We are at a 4% test positivity rate based on data reported through the end of February. So we're very pleased to see the projection and the rate of decline. And we are seeing about 12.6 daily new cases per 100,000 residents, as reflected in the case growth chart as well. So we are seeing numbers that we have last seen kind of at the end of last summer. So we're really feeling very positive about kind of the status of the disease, here as we continue to see these rates of decline. Next slide, please. Similar to our case rates, our testing volume of testing is declining as well, but a number of cases is declining faster than the decline in testing. So we continue to believe that this is a good date and metric. And again, our hospital admissions are declining as well. And the rate of not only the admissions, but the number of patients that are in the hospital also continues to decline. And lastly, just wanted to highlight the wastewater data and one of the new metrics that we are beginning to monitor more closely and really was very helpful as we were looking and monitoring the Omicron surge here over the last couple of months. The measure in our wastewater also continues to decline and is staying at a very low level. And we're looking forward to incorporating wastewater data into how we are continuing to monitor the disease moving forward, knowing that this is another leading indicator that we can watch to understand if we are beginning to see case counts increase again. And I'm happy to pause there and answer any questions or also possibly defer to my colleague, Emily Emerson, who's also joined me.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner Dornfeld. I see we have a question from Representative Egbadje.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Dornfeld. Appreciate the presentation. So I know this is coming from the CDC, and you mentioned that they are now taking an individual approach to mitigating COVID, but is there anything that is preventing states like us and here in Minnesota from taking more of a population-based approach to COVID mitigation strategies as we're continuing to deal with the ongoing cases and transmission?
Ms. Dornfeld.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Gabaje. Correct. These recommendations are coming from the CDC, and they're recommending that the country and states can move to more of an individual approach, but there is nothing preventing the state from taking other measures should that be a choice.
Representative Egbadje.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Mr. Chair, and appreciate that, Ms. Dornfeld. Yeah, I think, as we're still dealing with the ongoing you know, pandemic, you know, we know that there are still children under five who can't get vaccinated. There's still the long-term effects from COVID that we're seeing play out. So I hope that through this committee and others that we can continue to think about ways to, you know, not just leave everything to everyone individually. So that's all I would say. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Assistant Commissioner Dornfield, for the presentation. Appreciate hearing this again. So I do want to make sure that I'm understanding it though correctly, and I'm going to try to restate maybe what we've heard now, and then ask a question. And so according to the new guidelines, there's a point in the pandemic when the CDC is saying it's best to look at individuals taking actions rather than having policies in place for that impacted population. And so the CDC is, you know, there's a point where you can make that transition from population mitigation factors to just individuals making choices for mitigating factors. And then that's when you follow the recommendations of CDC and your doctors, whether to wear masks and other kinds of precautions. So that's what I'm understanding right now. And then my question is, so as Minnesota, have we moved into individual? Are the measures good enough that we're now saying that individuals can be making the best choices for themselves rather than we should be talking about populate or according to the CDC's recommendation, looking at the population? And then when did, you know, what are the measures that said that when did we drop below those points, which are, in a sense, I know, can almost be seen arbitrary, that one day you're on one side of it and the next time you're on the other side of it, that, you know, there's discretion and judgment that have to come into place. But how, you know, what of the measures, where are we right now? And you know, what should we all be watching for, I guess?
Thank you. Assistant Commissioner Dornfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Pryor. As of this morning, and I should note that the CDC is updating their community levels on a weekly basis. And as of this morning, there were only three counties in the state of Minnesota that were at the high transmission level. The majority of the state is in, transmission of a high community level. The majority of the state is in the low community level. And I think it's important to note that in the state of Minnesota, there have not been statewide community level mitigation requirements for quite some time. There have been some counties and cities that have chosen to put some of those policies in place. From a state level, we have been in a state where it has been up to individuals to make a determination about how to best protect themselves and their families and the community. And so, I would anticipate that would be the approach moving forward. But again, the Department of Health in partnership with CDC will continue to provide information for Minnesotans to be making those determinations.
Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a quick follow-up question. How can an individual find out if they live in a county that's at higher risk?
Assistant Commissioner Dornfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Pryor. The CDC is updating that information on a weekly basis on their website, and the Department of Health is in the process of both absorbing and understanding kind of this change in approach that happened, and we'll be moving toward updating that information on our own website as well.
You mentioned, Assistant Commissioner, that there were three counties that are currently at a higher level. Are you able to, do you know offhand which three those are?
I could certainly pull it up quickly. I don't have that many tabs open on my computer. Mr. Chair and members, Polk County is in a high level. Olmsted County remains in a high level. And Wabasha County.
Thank you.
And this was last updated on March 3rd.
Thank you, that's helpful. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner Dornfield, if this question is outside of the scope of this discussion, it's totally fine. I just wanted to take advantage of the opportunity while you're here. You had a slide up at the beginning of your presentation that says we recognize the risk of severe COVID is lower with vaccination boosters and prior infection. I had seen a number of newspaper stories about, I don't know, a number of weeks ago that pointed out in their headline that vaccinated COVID positive patients had begun to exceed unvaccinated. Is that something that you could help me understand? What's going on there? And looking at the CDC guidelines and recommendations here, how's the public sort of supposed to balance that kind of a headline with some of the recommendations that continue to be made? Just curious what your take on that is.
Assistant Commissioner Dornfeld.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Heitzman. I can say we certainly have seen vaccine breakthrough cases, and those that have been vaccinated, contracting COVID, I would say particularly during the Omicron surge, when we saw very high rates of spread. But we can certainly follow up with you to kind of have a more detailed conversation with some of the experts from MDH to kind of share more information with you about that topic.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just follow up to that. Yes, I'd appreciate some more information because people are asking a lot of questions and they're trying to understand. On one hand, we continue to roll out the vaccine as something that we're hoping, I guess, assuming could continue to have a positive effect for some people. But the stories that we're hearing seem to contradict that recommendation. And the reason I'm asking, of course, is people are wondering, okay, if Omicron was an example of a mutation that caused breakthrough cases in significant numbers and caused those headlines that suggested or reported, maybe a better way to say, hospitalizations of vaccinated was exceeding those unvaccinated. They're just trying, like everybody else, to figure out what's best for their families, trying to understand, you know, how to best protect themselves if that is something that, you know, they're trying to seek what's the best process. So I guess the next question would be, and maybe you could get some follow-up with your office, would be, what are our expectations going forward as we see new variants? Is the vaccine going to change so that that's addressed, or is that impossible to predict and we're going to continue making similar recommendations like what I see here relative to the vaccine? Maybe that's something, like I say, we could follow up on, but if you do have more that you'd like to share now, that'd be fine.
Assistant Commissioner Dornfeld, I was also interested in the question of the potential variants. I know there's an Omicron subvariant that's been reported in some areas. So if you have any information about that as well, I'd be interested in knowing.
Certainly, I can speak first to kind of the vaccine breakthrough, Mr. Chair and Representative Heinzman. Just I think such a different focus has been put on vaccines in a very different way compared to, you know, how historically we all, you know, kind of have understood them. But vaccines really, the COVID vaccine and vaccines are really designed we hope they prevent infection, and they do in many cases for individuals, to prevent that severe illness and death. And so we, you know, have seen, and we do anticipate that there will be breakthrough cases. But the purpose is really to prevent that severe illness and death. But Representative Heinzman, we'll be certain to follow up with you to kind of answer some of those more specific questions. As far as the questions around variants, certainly that is something that both in Minnesota, across the country, and across the world, we are continuing to monitor very closely, not knowing what the next variant might look like. Mr. Chair, you're representing, I think, or asking about the BA2 Omicron variant, and we are starting to see some additional cases in Minnesota of that variant. But based on what we know now, it is no more, it does not cause any greater harm to individuals who contract the BA2 variant versus the other Omicron variant. And even though we're seeing a greater share of that variant, we're still seeing our overall case counts decline. And so while it's a greater share of the cases we are seeing, we're not seeing an increase in cases as a result. We don't know what the future holds for another variant of COVID. As Commissioner Malcolm often says, I'm quoting Mr. Osterholm, but our crystal ball is very muddy. But we do know that we have nation-leading sequencing happening here in Minnesota to monitor very closely the variants that we're seeing in Minnesota, and working in partnership with the CDC and others across, again, the country and the world to understand kind of what might be coming next.
Mr. Chair, final question.
Sure, Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, you bring up a number of very, very interesting issues there. And I'm wondering, is there any data that you could point us to with the variants coming, like Omicron, if you were better off? And I'm just wanting to know if there's help for those that are asking this question, because people are asking me. With the variants coming, do we have any data telling us if folks were better off having natural immunity or better off having vaccinations? Is there any information out there to help people make an educated choice?
Assistant Commissioner Dornfeld.
Mr. Chair, Representative Heintzman, I am not aware of any data, but certainly I can take that back to the department and follow up with you. I think as we've seen, even just comparing the Delta variant versus the Omicron variant over the course of the last 6 months, each variant presents itself differently, both in terms of how easily it is spread and the level of impact to individuals, both vaccinated or otherwise, and kind of its impact on causing severe COVID. And so I can certainly bring your question back to the department, but I think each new variant presents itself differently, and it requires a quick study by scientists, not only in Minnesota, but across the world to understand as they come forward.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner Dornfeld. I would like to turn to the bills at this point. We do have two, and I know one of the testifiers has a conflict.
Mr. Chair, just a comment, if it's okay.
If it's quick.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. It does seem that is information that we should have in this committee. That the agency that should be able to provide when we're discussing something like this. People are really struggling trying to figure out what is the best path for their family to protect their families. Is it a vaccination, which there's no question has benefited some, but has also had all other health impacts, versus am I protected now that maybe my family had COVID? So if we could get that, I think that would be super helpful. So thank you, Assistant Commissioner, for coming in.
Sure. Assistant Commissioner, if you do have some information to share with Representative Heintzman, please also send it to myself and Simon Brown, the committee administrator, and we can make sure it gets sent to all committee members. And if you or somebody from the department is able to stay around for the discussion in case a question comes up, that would certainly be helpful, but I understand if you have a conflict as well. So thank you for coming. The first bill on the agenda is House File 3862. Representative Bolden, thank you for coming before the committee. I will move that House File 3862 be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Representative Bolden, would you like to present your bill?
I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, committee members. I'm grateful to be before you this morning to present House File 3862. This is a bill aimed at protecting Minnesotans, keeping them healthy, and being proactive. After 2 years in a global pandemic, Minnesotans have been through a lot. As of yesterday, we have had more than 1.4 million cases of COVID-19, and 12,221 Minnesotans have lost their lives because of it. We know more about COVID-19 now than we ever have. We know that close-fitting, high-quality masks help to slow the spread and keep people safe. We know that easy-to-use, accurate, rapid antigen tests give people information that helps them make decisions about how to keep people safe. We know that vaccines are safe and effective. Thankfully, 66% of Minnesotans are now fully vaccinated. We know the pandemic has not impacted everyone equally, and that communities of color continue to be disproportionately affected. While we don't know the full impact, we do know that COVID-19 can have ongoing effects for many, sometimes called long COVID. There's still much to be learned about this. Overall, we are in a much better place today in terms of case numbers and hospitalizations. And for that, we can all be grateful. But as we just have heard, we don't know what the future holds. That crystal ball continues to be muddy. Worldwide, less than 50% of the population is fully vaccinated, and this leaves the door open for new variants and future waves. Additionally, there are still people who remain at increased risk. For example, those who are immunocompromised and those under five who still cannot be vaccinated. So for all these reasons, this bill would create a program to allow the Minnesota Department of Health to distribute KN95 masks and rapid antigen tests directly to Minnesotans at no cost to them. Providing these tools to those who want them will allow Minnesotans to take actions we know will keep each other safe. So I have several testifiers to speak to the value of this, Mr. Chair. And so with your permission, I'll turn it over to them, starting with Dr. Lichten, and we'll be happy to stand for questions. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. We do have six people who have signed up to testify on this bill. So, and we have another bill on the agenda. So I would ask testifiers to keep their testimony to 2 or 3 minutes. Dr. Lichten is first on the list, and after her will be Caleb Schultz. So welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I am Dr. Lichten. My name is Hannah Lichten. I am a primary care doctor in Minneapolis, trained in pediatrics and internal medicine. I have been taking care of patients with COVID and people with countless other medical conditions since the beginning of the pandemic, which was now officially 2 years ago. I'm here to testify in support of HF 3862. 2 years into this pandemic, we now need to be better prepared to support Minnesotans than we have in the past. Access to high quality masks and free and accessible tests is the foundation for an effective public health response in Minnesota. Too many of my patients have had no access to home testing or high quality masks thus far. Many of my patients don't have commercial insurance and so are unable to get insurance reimbursement for their COVID tests. Many live in households with more than four people, and so the federal mail out tests were simply not enough. Even my family of four goes through four tests in a single day during a surge, and we need more than that. I frequently hear from patients that they've been unable to access high filtration masks on their own, and that limits their ability to safely meet their basic needs when case rates are high. Cost is one barrier I hear for getting these good masks, but physically finding and getting to these masks can be hard too. My patients who are high risk for COVID, for example, people who are going through cancer treatment or have rheumatoid arthritis, heart disease, emphysema, they need the highest level of protection even after being vaccinated. And for those that rely on public transportation, which is many of my patients, getting to a pharmacy to get to a mask just isn't safe because they don't already have that mask to safely get around. This bill will get tests and masks to people who need them most in the setting that works for them. I, am grateful that right now we have low case rates in Minnesota, but this lull is temporary. We will face another surge with either BA2 or a different variant, and the steps laid out in HF 3862 will help ensure that when this happens, Minnesotans will be able to access the tools that they need to be safe. Thanks so much.
Thank you for your testimony, Dr. Lichten. Next on the agenda is Caleb Schultz, and after Caleb Schultz will be Kate Barton. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair and Representative. It's a pleasure to be speaking with you this morning. My name is Dr. Caleb Schultz. I am a physician at Hennepin Healthcare in Minneapolis, specializing in anesthesiology. I live in Minnetonka with my wife and three children. My wife is also a physician practicing in pediatrics, and my three children are in preschool and elementary school. My youngest is still unable to access any COVID-19 vaccination. So we continue to have to remain strongly vigilant within our own family. Today, I'm testifying on behalf of the Twin Cities Medical Society. I'm a longtime board member of TCMS. We are an organization that represents physicians and medical students living and working in the seven county Twin Cities metro area and throughout the state. And I'm testifying for TCMS in support of HF 3682. As physicians, my colleagues and I know all too well the threat that COVID poses to Minnesotans of all ages. While vaccines are an important tool in preventing and lessening the harmful impacts of COVID, other mitigation tools, of course, are necessary. And TCMS wholeheartedly supports this proposed policy. The focus on masking and testing are critical adjuncts in our fight against the common enemy, COVID-19. We mask, yes, because it protects us, but also our family and our neighbors. And we test and we need access to easy at-home testing because wishing away our sniffles as a common cold is just that, wishful thinking. We need to be able to have access to simple, easy, and in-home to protect our family and our neighbors. We should do everything possible to eliminate barriers, real or perceived, to combating our enemy, COVID-19, providing high-quality masks and at-home rapid testing for free is a major part of that multi-component arsenal needed in our ongoing battle. And while we all hope we are done battling with COVID-19, hope is not a strategy. We must remain vigilant and prepared. Please support HF 3682.
Thank you for your testimony, Dr. Schultz. The next testifier is Kate Barton, and after Kate Barton will be Jillian Nelson. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kate Barton. I'm a health self-advocate, and I'm an autistic adult. I live in Hugo. I'm here today to testify and support House File 3862. Many people who have disabilities are at higher risk for serious complications from COVID. We've seen people with disabilities who've had COVID experience higher rates of hospitalization and death throughout the pandemic. As the world moves to fully reopen, many people with disabilities want to continue to have helpful COVID precautions, such as wearing comfortable and effective masks and access to testing. It's important that these tools are really readily available to us too. Unfortunately, there are gaps in what Medicare and Medicaid covers for home tests. The government reimbursement program doesn't work for people who are on Medicaid and Medicare. This only works for private insurance. Transportation is also an issue for us to have access to getting masks and testing. With much mobility, you have to plan ahead. And if you tell them you're going to either pick up a COVID test or getting tested, they probably won't take us. Metro mobility is hit or miss anyways. It's hard to rely on them for something that is this important. I also live with my parents who are high risk. They're both in their 70s and have medical issues. I also need to make sure that I can get the necessary supplies to protect our household. They are also my caregivers. They also need to access the supplies too. And I need them to stay healthy too, because this is where I live. And finally, the social isolation that caused by COVID-19 has been really challenging. This disability population is the population that has been hit hardest by social isolation and lockdowns. To begin with, we have fewer choices where we go. I've been isolated since March 2020. Before COVID, I went out daily for social interaction, but all that stopped when the pandemic started. The lack of social outlets and social isolation has impacted me. Human interaction is what everyone needs to thrive, even a person with a disability. Having access to a quick testing kit would make it easier for me to be able to have more social plans and to do more activities, knowing that I can take a test before I go and proceed safely. This mask and testing program, like the one in House File 3862, would be really helpful to the disability community and address the accessibility issues that we have in getting masks and test kits. It would also provide an inclusive community as well. Thank you for allowing me to testify today, Representative Boulder and fellow community members.
Thank you for your testimony. Next is Jillian Nelson, and after Jillian Nelson will be Ann Safford. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Freiberg and committee members. My name is Jillian Nelson, and I'm the Community Resource and Policy Advocate for the Autism Society of Minnesota. I'm also an autistic adult. I'm here this morning asking for support for House File 3862. This is a bill and a plan that has the best interests of Minnesota as a whole in mind. However, this bill is imperative for the well-being of the disability community. Our community has struggled throughout the pandemic due to lack of preparedness and future planning. We need to be prepared now for future waves, and that means access to quality masks and accessible testing. The disability community has been impacted by COVID at a greater height for 2 years. We have higher risks medically, and need for in-person supports put us at a higher exposure risk. Not only will this plan for mask and testing reduce our own direct risk, but it will also create a safer community, which can hopefully prevent returning to intensive quarantining that cuts people with disabilities off from needed care, necessary supports, and honestly, the community as a whole. The disability community has been an afterthought through much of this pandemic. At every aspect of our lives, including hospital access, testing, vaccines, supports and services, and more. In fact, to this very day, we are still lacking accessible testing and vaccine clinics. The preventative measures outlined in House File 3862 will reduce the impact future waves of COVID have on the disability community and give our community a break from existing in full-blown crisis mode. This is something our community, including myself, desperately need. Thank you for your support of House File 3862.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up is Ann Safford, and after Ann Safford will be Assistant Commissioner Joanna Dornfeld. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. My name is Ann Safford, and I am testifying in support of HF 3862. Just a little bit about my family. My husband and I both work full-time, and we have three teenagers. My daughter, Brenna, was born with Down syndrome, is a cancer survivor, and has moderate hearing loss. My son, Max, struggled with asthma as a young child and continues to need treatment when he gets a cold or the flu. Our family unit has been significantly impacted by the pandemic, and we have greatly benefited from the community resources available to us throughout these last few years when and if we could find them and access them. Our pediatricians still recommend we wear KN95 masks and test regularly. We are all vaccinated and boosted, all just to keep Brenna safe. But there has been times we struggled to find the resources we needed to keep our family protected, even with the help of the village we have supporting our family. Not everyone has had, as you have all heard, the same access to things like trusted medical guidance, tests, and masks. We have heard firsthand from families that have been adversely impacted by the lack of tests or even the lack of understanding of how to administer the tests. We also know many of the school staff that support families like ours cannot afford KN95 masks on their salaries. The more access we give the public to masks and testing, the more likely we can keep kids in school and caregivers and staff in the workforce. I believe that government plays an important role in providing these resources. Now more than ever, we need to establish and reinforce the systems that can provide a uniform level of access. All families, regardless of background, the challenges we face, where we live, will benefit. Our communities will be stronger with this type of investment. Thank you for the support of HF 3862, for your time, and for all that you guys do.
Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate it. Next is Assistant Commissioner Joanna Dornfeld. Welcome back to the committee. Please just for the record, identify yourself once more and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Again, my name is Joanna Dornfeld and I'm an Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Health. Just here to speak briefly in support of Representative Bolden's bill. And first, I want to thank Representative Bolden for bringing it forward.
The department has worked in partnership with many others to provide access to testing and masks throughout the pandemic. Just since during the Omicron surge, we were able to work across the enterprise to distribute more than 550,000 masks across the state and 500,000 at-home tests. But we recognize that there are still gaps and needs for Minnesotans across the country, or across the state of Minnesota. To date, all of those resources have been funded by the federal government, and we look forward to working with Representative Bolden, the members of this committee, as we move forward to make sure that Minnesota is even more prepared for the next potential surge in cases. So thank you, Representative Bolden. The department looks forward to working with you.
Thank you for your testimony. That concludes the list of people who have signed up to testify. Is there any member discussion? Representative Grunhagen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to the testifiers. I know you mean very well and you're concerned. I do have a little bit of a contrast from other medical experts. First, I'd just like to say Johns Hopkins University did a study on the lockdowns, and their conclusion was, a recent study, it had little to no effect on the spread of COVID here in this country. The other thing is, I have another medical expert. I don't have permission to share his name because I hadn't talked to him. But he brought out that when the swine flu was back, I think in 2008, he wrote a big article in one of my local district papers that they did extensive studies on masks. And they found that they weren't going to prevent the spread. And the swine flu infected millions of people in this country, and we had deaths from it. I can't remember how many, but it was quite a few. So I think with the decrease and the CDC, I happen to agree with them. It's individual choice, and I don't know if it's government's place to step in at this time when we see what the results are. Also, I have a question for Representative Bolden.
Proceed.
Okay, Representative Bolden, in looking at the bill on lines 1.2 and 1.3, it says the KN95 respirator, commonly, and on 1.13, it says that it's commonly made and used in China. I would prefer the words USA. And the other thing, I did read an article several weeks ago that the N95s in China are not made as well as a USA-made N95. So why is there a particular reason why we're referencing China in this bill?
Representative Bolden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Grunhagen, for the question. I will say this language was worked on in collaboration with House Research and with the Department of Health. And so that is where that language came from. I'm happy to take another look at that. The fact is that we wanted to get at using KN95 high quality masks. And the fact is that many of those are manufactured in China, but happy to have continued conversation on that. I also, if I could, Mr. Chair, just in relation to your comments, would just sort of refocus us on the scope and intent of this bill, which isn't connected at all to lockdowns, isn't connected to swine flu, really is focused on, you referenced individual choice. And I think this really is in alignment with this. We're not requiring any individuals to do anything. We are encouraging and supporting the individual choices of Minnesotans who want to have access to high quality masks and currently don't, as well as tests. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Bolden. I'd also point out the language doesn't actually require the masks to be made in China. It's just in the definition. It just says it's a respirator that is commonly made and used in China. So Representative Grunhagen, any follow-up?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for that clarification too. And thank you, Representative Bolden, for your response. The reason I reference the swine flu is because they, according to the medical expert that I've referenced, they said extensive studies were done on masks at the time of the swine flu, and they were shown to be ineffective in stopping the spread. So, the other concern I have, the problem with government when they show up and they provide things, one of the things I've noticed over the years, the price of everything goes up. So as soon as the government provides it, all of a sudden the mask costs 2, 3, 4 times higher than what they should. So those are some of my concerns. I guess at this point, I'm not going to be supporting the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. I do have a few members on the list to ask questions. I will get to each of you, just, but I may try to limit it to one and possibly a follow-up, because we do have another bill on the agenda. Representative Egbadje.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Bolden, for bringing forward this bill. I think it's a good idea considering the presentation we heard earlier and the information from our testifiers. One thing I wanted to clarify, though, the antigen tests are going to be provided easy access, but is there a similar component for tracing of the test results?
Representative Bolden.
Thank you, Representative Egbadje, for that question. I think it's a great one. This bill in its current form does not speak to that. I think we worked on this in the height of the Omicron surge when there was a gap with that, certainly as home tests were being done. So I think there's opportunity for that, and would be happy to work with you on that.
Representative Egbadje.
Thanks so much. And thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Ackland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have a question for Representative Bolden too. And really true in way of conversation here, a question about, as we know that the N95 mask, KN95s, are more effective if they're worn properly. And what I have, one concern I have when I even see people wearing N95s or KN95s, that they're not being worn properly. As a nurse, we were fit tested, quite a process, in order to make sure we were fully protected. But beyond that, so that's a piece of the question, but beyond that is we know that the more you wear these masks, the less effective they become. And I did some quick research. One place said, you know, what, 5 days would be maximum for to wear a mask. Another, the CDC said in general, 2 or 3 days. So my question as I go forward is, on the intent of this, because sending, providing one mask is would not be necessarily what's necessary for any given individual. So, just my question is like about the intent of this supply and demand kind of issue, with knowing that these masks are only good for a limited number of days.
Representative Bolden.
Thank you, Representative Ackland, for that question. And as a fellow nurse, I'm certainly familiar with the fit testing requirements and wanting to be sure that people have what they need to be safe really is the intent of this bill. And so one, as we have heard, knowing that not everyone currently has access to those high quality masks. And so I agree with you. The intent is to be sure that people have what they need. So sending one mask per individual is not enough. And so the intent really is to be sure people have what they need. So it would be an ongoing process and available for people to request what they need, which would be more than one mask on an ongoing basis.
Okay. Representative Ackland, any follow-ups?
And just, was there any intent, as we've heard from some of the testifiers, the people at higher risk definitely would need this potentially for a longer period of time than somebody that's at low risk. Was there any intent in this bill to limit the numbers to people who are at higher risk?
Representative Bolden.
Thank you, Representative Ackland, for that question. I think it's a good one. The overall intent of the bill is to be sure that everyone has what they need, that it is inclusive. However, there is a provision, some language in the bill that allows the commissioner to prioritize. And so certainly recognizing that some people are at higher risk, some people are at higher need, there is language to allow some prioritization. But again, I'll just say that the overall intent of the bill is to be all inclusive and to be sure that everyone has what they need.
Okay, Representative Ackland, final comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's all.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Bolden, for bringing this forward. Just the impact of this is so important, and particularly in light of the testimony that we heard earlier on how the state is moving from a population prevention measures and mitigation to individuals who are at higher risk taking a step forward, and this idea that we can't abandon those people that are at higher risk, and not just of contracting the disease, but having serious outcomes from COVID-19. And as we know from what's happened, all of us know, hospitalizations and deaths. So this is just critical that we support those people that are still at those higher risks. And I think this is a great piece moving forward to do that. So thank you for doing that. I have a question now. And the question is, I know one problem that we've had all along, right now, children under 5 cannot, you know, are not eligible for vaccines yet. It's also an age group where it's really hard to find masks that are effective for that age group. So it's the family around them has to protect the younger children that can be in childcare and situations where, you know, they do have high level of exposure. So any advancement in protecting this group of our youngest Minnesotans, and are there any masks out there that work?
Thank you for the question, Representative Bolden.
Thank you, Representative Pryor, for that question. I think it is a good one. And certainly our littlest Minnesotans are at risk because they cannot yet get vaccinated. We hope that's coming soon, but hasn't happened yet. So this bill doesn't specifically reference children-sized masks. I am happy to look further into that and work on that piece. I think it's a very good question.
Yeah. Thank you. I see no further member questions. So Representative Bolden, do you have any concluding remarks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, just thank you to committee members, and especially thank you to those who testified today for your work and your perspective. And really just would reiterate, this bill is aimed at protecting Minnesotans and keeping everyone safe and making sure everyone has what they need, given that we don't know what the future holds. And now is a time that we can be proactive and put things in place so we can have that safety into the future. So thank you for your time and for your support.
Thank you, Representative Bolden. So with that, I will renew my motion that House File 3862 be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Could the clerk please take the roll?
Chair Freiberg.
Yes.
Freiberg, aye. Vice Chair Bierman.
Bierman, aye.
Bierman, aye. Representative Grunhagen.
No.
Grunhagen, nay. Representative Akam.
Akam, aye.
Akam, aye. Representative Abaje.
Aye.
Abaje, aye. Representative Ackland.
Ackland, yes.
Ackland, aye. Representative Carlson.
Aye.
Carlson, aye. Representative Franzen.
Nope.
Franzen, nay. Representative Heintzman.
No.
Heintzman, nay. Representative Morrison.
Morrison, aye.
Morrison, aye. Representative Pryor.
Aye.
Pryor, aye. Chair, you have 8 ayes and 3 nays.
Okay. There being 8 ayes and 3 nays, the bill is on its way. Thank you for appearing before the committee, Representative Bolden. The second bill on the agenda is House File 1419. Representative Hassan, welcome to the committee. I will move that House File 1419 be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Representative Hassan, I see you also have a DE1 amendment. Would you like me to move that amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I move adoption of the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like the committee to consider. Did you have any comments about the amendment, Representative Hassan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment is a delete all amendment, and what it does is it just targets funds to specifically nonprofits that are doing this work instead of county public health, and it just just details what that what the organizations are and how many years of work that they have been doing around skin lightening. So it's just
It's just being more specific and targeted and intentional about what we're doing. That's it.
Okay. Thank you. Any discussion? Okay. All those in favor of the amendment, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion prevails. So the bill is in the shape you would like. Representative Hassan, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for giving me an opportunity to present this bill. This is a very simple bill that creates funding for public health awareness campaign to educate Mani Piepak communities the dangers of skin lightening products that contain high levels of mercury and other chemicals. Skin lightening is one folks use product to change their skin tone for a lighter tone. I'm sure this wouldn't have been a problem and no one's business, of course, if this was a safe practice, but it's not, as this practice uses harsh chemicals that could cause negative and serious health impact. In testing conducted by Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and Minnesota Department of Health of 549 skin lightening creams bought online and in stores, about half of these products came from U.S. stores, and all of these products exceeded the U.S. The FDA limit on on no more than one part per million of mercury in cosmetic products. The exposure of mercury and other chemicals in this product not only impact the person using it, but also all the people in that household, including children, spouses, and other family members. Women are using this product while they're pregnant, nursing, and easily expose this to babies. In 2019, the legislature allocated a small funding to do this work. I was happy to see that the governor's bill included some recommendations to work on skin lightening issue and to continue this education and awareness. With that, Mr. Chair, I have a couple testifiers who can explain this issue and the impacts of it more, and then we'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Hassan. The first person I have on the list is Amira Adawe. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and member of the committees. My name is Amira Adawe. I am the executive director of the Beautiful Project, which is an organization that's combating colorism, skin lighting practices, and chemical exposures. I have been working on this issue close to 11 years now. So skin lighting practice is a product that consists of creams and soaps that people use intentionally to change their skin color to become to get a lighter skin. And so it's so much embedded in many cultures. Many communities of color use these products. And when I say many communities of color, that includes African-born communities, Asians, Latinx communities, and also African-American communities. And so it's widely used products. As Representative Hassan said, they're available in stores and also online, so people can easily access those products. And it contains those products contain high levels of mercury, hydroquinone, and highly pollutant steroids, which can turn to very toxic. Women are using at least 2 to 3 times a day, and they're keeping at their homes. And so, and as Representative Hassan said, Department of Health and Pollution Control Agencies have done a research 3 years ago, and they have tested homes, and homes tested high levels of mercury or air in home, which indicates that exposure is not only limited to the person who's using, but also those who are around them, children who are, you know, around them, and those who are visiting them. So we're talking about widespread community exposure, not only individual level, widespread community exposure. And women are using during pregnancy and when they're breastfeeding, and that can pass, you know, through the fetus to the child, and then during the feeding, it can pass through the breast milk to the child, which can cause neurological problems. And so we're talking about maternal child health, a huge multi impact of public health, maternal child health, and community-wide public health issue. This also raises huge adolescent health psychological problems. I have been partnering with public schools and charter schools to see how colorism is impacting, which colorism is discrimination against skin color. And many young people disclose that they are experiencing bullying, colorism in schools, which impacts them psychologically. And so there's that also psychological impact where we need to heal communities. And so what needs to happen is continuous education, health education, but also how do we address some of the psychological impacts that we're seeing in young people to raise more awareness within adolescent health area, but also create community-wide campaigns to educate them and also address in terms of exposing these products. There's also environmental exposure component, which is people are disposing products, not safely disposing the products, and so it's ending up in our environment. So this is a huge public health issue that needs to be addressed in very large scale. And that is the support that we need from the legislators. And so thank you so much for hearing this bill, and please support this bill. Thanks.
Thank you for your testimony. The other testifier I have who has signed up is Hafsa Farah. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Hafsa Farah, and I'm here to testify in support of the Skin Lightening Products Public Awareness and Education Grant Program. I am a sophomore at Edina High School, and I have graduated from the Young Women Wellness and Leadership Initiative led through BeautyWell. During my experience at school, I have witnessed and experienced offhand comments about how a dark-skinned student would disappear in the dark and later turned off to watch a movie. How kids are constantly told not to wear bright colors because they have dark skin, which makes their skin look ugly. How they are constantly being compared to mud on the floor because it has become so normalized in many communities to dislike darker skin. When youth are constantly told that their skin is not beautiful, they drive them to seek out skin lightening products. These products harm the users and those around them. It harms not only their physical health, but also their mental well-being. I believe that all youth should have the opportunity to learn about the effects of skin lightening, as I have. Youth such as myself, who have benefited from the Young Women Wellness and Leadership Initiative, can gain knowledge through this bill that helps them dig up the roots of colorism, the cause of skin lightening in their community. By learning to accept and love their skin, they reject skin lightening products that are detrimental to their physical and mental health. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. That's all of the people who have signed up to testify. So we can turn now into member discussion. Representative Grunhagen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I have a question for Representative Hassan. I appreciate your concern, especially if this is causing harm to people, young people. And I identify with that. I don't want that to happen either. But on the other hand, you know, if there are harmful chemicals being in these things, why doesn't the FDA clamp down on this? I mean, we see recall after recall, in food, other areas when there's a problem. So I don't understand why we're still allowing this if there's as much damaging chemicals and stuff in them as is alleged here. Could you respond to that? Thank you.
Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Rep. Grunhagen, for the question. That is a very important question. The problem is that many of these products are coming into the country illegally. And this is a multi-billion dollar, if not trillion dollar industry. So it's not like we are fighting with, small companies here. We're fighting really big companies all over the world. And this is, something that's happening all over the world. So the FDA can only work with, products that are made in the U.S. They can recall them, they can take them off the shelves, but some of these products are coming in, under the black market or whatever it is, and there's no way to regulate that. And I want Amira to just speak on the work that she has done going to different ethnic malls and how these products are brought in and they're readily available all over the place. Amira, do you wanna chime in?
Ms. Adawe.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Hassan. That's a really great question. FDA, yes, these products are illegal. However, that FDA has been telling us for the last 10 years that they don't have capacity to fully regulate these products, both in stores and online. However, we advocated through Congress 2 years ago, and Congress passed legislation to fund FDA to regulate. They are now in the implementation process to regulate online and in-store regulation. However, as Representative Hassan mentioned, this is a multi-billion industry. And so FDA will take for a while for them to even regulate effectively. And then the other thing is that FDA in general, when it comes to cosmetics regulations, they're not doing a lot of regulation in that because of Congress never passed legislation. Last time the Congress passed legislation was 81 years ago when it comes to ingredients in cosmetics in general, and skin lighting products comes under that. And so that is the limitation that's happening in terms of FDA regulation.
Thank you, Ms. Adawe. Follow-up, Representative Grunhagen?
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Chairman. Thanks for those responses, Representative Hassan, and also the testifier. Again, I don't doubt your desire to help people, but when I look at this bill, like on line 2.11, you know, it's basically we're going to spend taxpayer money for public awareness and education program. There's no consequence to the companies that are actually doing this. And to me, it just is not going to, you know, be very effective. We need to have consequences, strong ones. And I'm glad to hear the federal government seems to be taking a step in that direction, because I don't want young people to be hurt by any of these chemicals or anything either. But just to throw money at this for public awareness and education with no consequence, you know, there's got to be a consequence for these companies that are selling it, whether in America or outside America. And I think you're better off pushing for legislation with strong consequences to these companies, to the point where it even bankrupts them, rather than just doing a, you know, spending taxpayer money on public awareness and education programs. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, Representative Hassan, response.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Rep. Grunhagen. Rep. Grunhagen, you and I can talk offline, and I'm. We can maybe, you know, trade off ideas and see what we can put in as, you know, accountability for these companies and how do we hold them accountable. I am definitely open to that. Thank you.
Oh, Mr. Chair?
Representative Grunhagen.
Yeah, I appreciate that response, Representative Hassan, because I do think that's a much better approach to actually getting, you know, stopping this abuse of these young people than just education and public awareness. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Representative Igbaje.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Rep. Hassan, for bringing forward this bill. Just wanted to add my commentary that I think that this is really necessary. I think sometimes the first steps towards accountability is the education and awareness, so that way people know what's harmful in these. I know that that has been seen in other industries where the more you educate people, the more there can be more popular support for pushing for these accountability measures. So really appreciate this, and that it's also going to be a grant program that will support organizations currently working on the ground on this issue. So thank you.
Yep. Thank you, Representative Igbaje. Any additional member discussion? Okay, I'll just comment. I mean, I do think, you know, when we've heard specific testimony about how, you know, the federal, so the FDA is the organization that would traditionally be in charge of regulating an industry such as this. I mean, the federal law that it enforces is the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. You know, these are allegedly cosmetic products, but where we've heard testimony about how they've been ineffective in regulating them, I do think having an outreach program and a public awareness campaign is a very valuable thing to do, particularly when, you know, these products are present in, you know, in communities, in community locations where people are potentially vulnerable to the messaging that they're conveying, and people are getting bullied, as we've heard about in the testimony. So I think this is a really important bill. I'll certainly be glad to support it. Did you have any closing comments, Representative Hassan, before we vote?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say this is a good bill. Please vote for it. Thank you.
Thank you. So with that, I will renew my motion that House File 1419 as amended be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Freiberg.
Yes.
Freiberg, aye. Vice Chair Bierman.
Bierman, aye.
Bierman, aye. Representative Grunhagen.
No.
Grunhagen, nay. Representative Acomb. Representative Acomb. Representative Abaje.
Aye.
Abaje, aye. Representative Ackland.
No.
Ackland, nay. Representative Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Carlson, aye. Representative Franzen.
Yes.
Franzen, aye. Representative Heintzman.
No.
Heintzman, nay. Representative Morrison. Representative Morrison.
Aye.
Morrison, aye. Representative Pryor.
Aye.
Pryor, aye. One more time, Representative Acomb. Chair, you have 7 ayes and 3 nays.
Okay, there being 7 ayes and 3 nays, the motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Hassan, and thank you to your testifiers. Your bill is on its way. Hope to see you in our committee again sometime soon. That concludes the business that we have before the committee, so keep your eyes out for an email notification about the agenda for next week. And seeing no questions or comments, you can have 18 minutes of your day back. This meeting is adjourned.